If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
We come to you from the media restaurant, which is all of a buzz after the first of the two semi-finals at the O2 Arena. We will be back, don't forget, don't worry. We will be back after Djokovic against Anderson as well. But we felt as though we just had to touch on everything that has just happened in Roger Federer against Alexander Zverev, in which Zverev has been victorious in straight sets. But that doesn't really tell the story. 7-5, 7-6 was the scoreline. But Grad Matt is here. Simon Briggs of The Telegraph is here. A lot has just happened, Simon. We have had, just to run you through it. First of all, I mean, Zverev played very well today. Very well. He won that first set 7-5, which was on serve all the way through. Then there was the break right at the end. Started the second, Federer got a break, started playing some glorious tennis for a few points, immediately broken back, went into a tie break, and then at 4-3 to Federer, a rally ensued. Federer hit a big backhand, seemed to be in charge of the rally. Zverev pulled out of the rally, pulled away from it, and alerted Federer and umpire Carlos Bernardes's attention down to Federer's end of the court, where a ball kid had dropped a ball mid-rally, stopped the rally. Umpire asked the ball kid if that had happened, that the ball kid had dropped the ball. Federer queried it as well. Yes, said the ball kid. They replayed the point. Zverev hit an ace, went on to win the match. Interview afterwards with Annabel Croft. Zverev clearly had this on his mind, apologised for what had happened. Crowd started booing him. Annabel Croft then ticked them all off and said, he's right, you know, and I really feel like you shouldn't be booing him. Show a bit more respect. What an afternoon we've had. Simon, what's your take?
Well, a much more proactive response from Annabel comparing the situation than we had at the US Open in similar circumstances. It wasn't quite as extreme a situation, was it, as it was at the US Open. I mean, here you felt that people were annoyed. There you felt that somebody might literally be ripped limb from limb. It was like the Colosseum. So, to be honest, I was running down the stairs. I mean, I watched the crucial point from the stadium. I was right behind Zverev when it happened, so I had kind of his eye view. And then I was running down the stairs, and then I heard the booing sort of through the corridor echoing down to me. So the finer details of that stage I had to catch up on via the TV replays. But yeah, an extraordinary way to finish, and a decent news story from the point of view of a rugged old hack like me.
Actually, it was one of... Were you in the stadium for the match?
I was, yeah.
It seemed to me I was at the back of our commentary box to give updates into Five Live's coverage, actually, of the rugby at the time. And they came over to me just as the booing started in that post-match interview, and I said what I was hearing. The interesting thing was, when I watched the clips back on TV afterwards, the booing didn't sound anywhere near as loud as it does when you're actually in the stadium. The same sort of feeling struck me when I was at the US Open during that incident with Serena Williams. What was your take on it all?
Well, firstly, thank goodness we've got a match that we can get our teeth into at last in this tournament. The round-robin stage is over. We're at the knockout stage and things have picked up. My initial reaction when it happened was, oh, what's Rev done? Because I thought that was an umpire's call with the sort of hindrance, and I thought things could get a bit sticky here. And actually, I thought Carlos Bernardes, seems to always be an umpire called Carlos, stuck in these situations, handled it quite well. Mm. And Federer went over to the ball boy and asked him about it, and they seemed to deal with it quite well. And interestingly, Fredrik Nielsen's been on Twitter in the aftermath saying how it happens all the time on the Futures Tour, the Challengers Tour, where a ball might come in from an opposing court or something like that the umpire doesn't see,
yeah,
and the player stops it. And Fredrik Nielsen said the umpire almost always in that situation says, well, tough, I didn't see it, it's my call. However, he has seen a few where if the ball boy's been involved, the ball boy's admitted it and the umpire's overturned the call and there's been a replay of the point like there was here. So my take on it was, actually, the actual players handled it very well. The umpire handled it very well. It was just a real shame that the crowd got out of hand. Even more inexplicable, I think, because the umpire explained what happened very clearly. They weren't booing at that point. They all heard it. And then, very unfortunate and kind of really just unfair on Zverev that it carried on into the interview.
He came into the press conference afterwards. I think we were all curious as to whether Federer would be irritated at all, whether he might have thought that there was any bad sportsmanship on play in play there at all. He was quite quick to say, look, Alexander Zverev apologised to me immediately, and I said, look, there's nothing to apologise for, it's fine. What was your take of the press conferences afterwards?
Well, I asked him the first question. I said, did it bother or affect you? And he said, what are you talking about? Obviously it affected me, he aced me. And then I said, well, yeah, but did it upset you? Did you think it was handled correctly? And he said, well, I was trying to think what I would have done if I had been in his shoes. And I think it was a kind of ballsy call to interrupt the point, because the umpire might have said, well, I didn't see it. And then, you know, the question was then clarified a couple of times with further inquiries from reporters. He said, you know, there's no question about sportsmanship. I've got no issue with Zverev. He said, he was asked if he'd spoken to the ball boy, and he said, yeah, he's coming over for dinner. And then said, no, he was joking, and followed up by saying, you know, I did ask him. He said he'd dropped it, and, you know, no problem from my end. I hope he doesn't have a sleepless night.
Yes.
I think he will.
Yeah.
I know I would. I'd be absolutely beside myself. I mean, I was hoping as I went down the stairs, I was really wondering in my head, how much am I going to focus on that ball kid in my piece? And then the booing rather took it out of my hands. It became a much bigger story because of the crowd reaction.
And it's so unusual to get an on-court interviewer who actually will take on a crowd like that. I mean, I've seen Sue Barker do it once in a slightly more gentle way when we had the David Nalbandian situation at Queen's. I think it was that one. And eventually, she was just trying to get people to be quiet and let people explain, because I think when Marin Cilic was speaking on that day, they were still booing, and she said, no, come on, you know, he hasn't done anything wrong. And Annabelle Croft, I'm not surprised, actually, when I think of her as an individual, because I commentated on a match at the US Open this year between, I think it was Madison Keys, maybe against Elise Mertens or someone like that, and it was one of those nights where the crowd has just come out for a night out, and they're here, they've got Novak Djokovic next. Nobody was taking any notice of the match in front of them whatsoever. They were sipping champagne, they were chatting, they were having a big old catch-up, it seemed to me, and it was just this general hubbub, and it was really uncomfortable because it felt really rude to the players. And Annabelle sitting next to me, and every so often she would turn off her microphone and she'd say, I think this is outrageous. I think these people are out of order. If I was this umpire, I would be telling this lot to be quiet and show some respect. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, I could actually probably believe you would, and I think after tonight, we know she would, but that's what was required, wasn't it? That actually then roused the rest of the crowd to sort of give Zverev a standing ovation.
Well, I've got to say that I was running down the stairs again, so I haven't heard it live. I've only seen the transcript of what she said. It was certainly well received as far as I could tell from everybody who did watch it live, even the tournament director gave her a thumbs up, didn't he, Adam Hogg, and said that it was an astonishingly disappointing reaction, which was... it was that quote was did raise a few eyebrows in the press room on the basis that there's some top dollar coming in from the guys who are in the stadium. They might have earned their right to free speech, whether we like it or not. I mean, all I did was compare the response from Alan Bell in my piece to Katrina Adams, who said this is not the outcome we were hoping for at the US Open. I mean, it's been rather turned into a point on which Katrina Adams has been attacked ever since. You can sort of see what she was trying to get at, but people have read it as we wanted Serena to win. I mean, she probably just meant didn't want it to end in this rather kind of bloodthirsty way.
I wouldn't have read her words in that way. But I think she let herself down in other ways, to be honest, in the aftermath.
Her later comments, yeah. Anyway, we're not talking about that so much, but the parallels, I guess, were a little too obvious to ignore.
Yeah, no, for sure. We've spent 9 minutes, 50 seconds talking about this incident because it dominates, really. It's not every day you get a situation like that. The tennis that unfolded in front of us, what did you make of it, Matt?
I thought it was clear quite early on that Zverev was playing a lot better than he was earlier on in the tournament. He was striking the ball with a lot more purpose, a lot more intent. And he said afterwards in his press he had a very clear game plan to be aggressive against Federer. And I do wonder, you know, that is how you beat Federer. You have to take charge, because otherwise you play on his terms and he does what he wants with you, really. And he played really well. He served really well. He was, I think his average first serve speed in the first set was over 130 miles an hour.
This is the thing. I thought earlier on in the tournament, and it may be the case that there is a fast gun here.
Yeah.
I've seen it in the past. I've certainly seen people get records when, you know, there's no way they normally hit it that fast. Here, at the start of this week, when he was hitting 140, then 141 in back-to-back serves, and I've not really been aware of him doing that in the past. I thought that's not realistic. Then you see another couple of guys like Anderson and Isner just heaving the ball down and not getting it as fast. It made me feel like, well, this is legitimate. Mm. It seems like he's added something to the serve, and he does it just with a kind of almost a cricketer's bowling arm. He just sort of rolls it over and gets an explosion of pace, doesn't he?
But my takeaway from Zverev serving at this tournament hasn't been so much the speed, it's been the fact that I don't think people are reading him. Novak said that he found it much harder to know where the ball was going against Zverev than he did against Isner, for instance. And for somebody like Federer, that's a big deal. It was funny in the first set because he felt that they were almost both had the same game plan, in the sense that Zverev wanted to come forward and Federer wanted Zverev to come forward.
Yes.
So they were like working towards the same end, which was Federer sort of trying to tweak little dipping balls past Zverev, or put them on his shoelaces, or just mess up his rhythm. And Zverev was almost like, yeah, okay, let's play that way. I'm going to show you that I can play these volleys. And he did volley decently, didn't he? It wasn't overwhelmingly clean. He's not got wonderful hands at the net, but it was good enough,
and it was better than usual for him at the net, I would say. And he actually won 12 more points than Federer did overall, and bearing in mind that the scoreline was actually quite close, that's a fairly large margin.
Quite a big disparity.
It kind of reminded me of that Mario match against Federer at the Australian Open a few years ago, the sort of five set thrashing. It was, you know, this wasn't a thrashing in any way, but it was...
I remember that one. That was in 2013.
You always felt like Murray was on top in that match and Federer was keeping it close. And to me, it felt similar today. It felt like Zverev was the better player.
Do you not feel, therefore, that we have just seen the first sign of Ivan Lendl's impact here? Because that was an Ivan Lendl coached Andy Murray that day in Australia, the match you described. What I thought watching today was a beefier Alexander Zverev. I think everything he hit was hit with intent to hurt. And if you think back to the Wimbledon final, which is the one I was thinking of at the time of 2012, when Murray came out, he bullied Roger Federer for an hour. He threw him about. Every time there was a ball there to be hit, he went after it. And today, there were not too many rallying balls from Alexander Zverev just to keep the rally going.
Very few.
He was hitting shots to hurt.
Well, he does have a weighty game from the back, but But yes, I think you're right. The self-belief today was outstanding, wasn't it? Because I felt Roger was a better player for the first 10 games, maybe. I would have picked Roger at that stage, but Zverev never was cowed, never went away, never seemed to doubt himself.
But he was doing it with talent, Federer, and tactics. He was playing almost like John McEnroe used to play, of different ball every shot.
Yeah, it would totally mess you up, and Zverev was like, I'm going to keep on coming. And then Federer kind of blew up. I felt there were 20 bad minutes. I mean, like you say, he dropped serve, lost a set, broke back one really good game, and then he had another really
shocker.
So for those 20 minutes, I don't know what happened in his head. Like, it felt like he went on holiday in his head for those 20 minutes, even though there was one really good game in that run, and then he sort of played okay, and it was even Steven from there again. I reckon those 12 points, that the margins might have happened in that 20 minutes
spell, because
he was getting beaten to love in Zverev's service games in that period. And he got broken himself twice, although he did get one break against the run of about 20 minutes. It was a complicated passage of play in terms of the dynamic, but I don't know what happened in his head there. Because I thought he'd been playing pretty well, and I thought, although Zverev was dealing well with the game plan, I still would have backed Federer after 10 games to keep him unsettled, and then he just kind of blew up.
Just two things. One, on the Lendl point, those matches we've mentioned, obviously with Murray, Lendl is a common denominator, but also Federer. Both those matches were against Federer. And I think players can create a bit of a game plan to disrupt Federer, to really sort of go after him, really. It doesn't always work. You have to execute it really well.
Well, there's a few bits of evidence this year alone, aren't there?
Indeed. And I think if we're looking ahead, I don't want to talk too much about the final because we don't know the opponent yet, but if it is Djokovic, it's much harder to come up with a game plan to hurt Djokovic for Zverev, I think, but we'll come to that if we need to. Just on Federer, he has lost a lot of matches this year that have been very, very tight. You think of the Indian Wells final, he lost a match point to Del Potro, same again in Miami to Kokkinakis. He was tight, lost at Wimbledon from match point up, Paris against Djokovic, and now this one here. Okay, he didn't have match point, but it was very tight. And you just feel in those big moments, for me, it's the serve. Where's the serve when he really needs it?
When he's at his best, he will just roll through a game, won't he?
Yeah, or if he's in a bit of trouble, he finds his serve. And he found it right at the, I think at 4-5 in the second set, he served quite well when he was under pressure. But that was really the only time. Other than that, kind of deserted him. And he was under 60% for the match. And actually, in every match this tournament, he was under 60%. And that's been a theme in the second half of the season.
One thing I would just like to raise was the amusing press conference Zverev gave after his third round robin match, where he said, "You boys think my forehand is absolute crap."
Yeah.
Because it almost seemed like he was making a point with it today. He really went after the forehand, didn't he?
Yeah.
He went after it cross, and he went after it on the line.
But this is what I think Lendl does to his pupils. It's what he did with Murray. He got him to go cross-court
Everyone thought Murray's forehand was absolute crap by the standards of every other shot Murray had. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And then the forehand became an asset during the Lendl years.
Well, he would become almost muscular with it. He would say, I am just going to take you on at every opportunity with that forehand.
And if Zverev's forehand is that strong as it was today, where do you go against him? Because his backhand is unbelievable.
Amazing. Well, how about that off-pace, sliced backhand halfway up the court, cross-court, that Federer hit in one really extended, good rally, and it's just asking the question. It's saying, you know, some people might think that's a short ball, but a lot of the time it's just a junk nightmare ball that you can't really do anything with. Zverev just sort of took two paces up to it and swept it down the line for
a clean
winner.
That's geometry. I mean, that is technically a killer shot. The ball's so low, the net's close to you. You've got to get it up at pace and then rip it with enough spin from low to get it down again.
Yeah, to hit a winner with that.
To do that in a double-handed backhand, his mechanics are unbelievable.
It is potentially one of the best backhands we've ever seen.
It's like Novak's any faster. I mean, I've thought that ever since I saw it.
We've talked about Federer in the press conference. Zverev, when he was with Annibal Kroft, who did help him out down there, he he was a bit lost for words. He was taken aback by that whole situation. He didn't, and who wouldn't be? I mean, he would never have experienced anything like that. It was not quite as extreme, but it was a little bit like the look in Osaka's eyes of just, well, what have I done? What do I do now? In the press conference, he admitted, I was quite upset actually in the locker room. You know, it obviously did hurt him because he was trying to work out, have I done something really wrong here? And just for a few minutes, that sort of too cocky facade of his that I think does rub people up the wrong way, because he hasn't, you know, your colleague Oliver Brown wrote a piece about him, which is a fascinating read, and I do urge people to read it with an open mind, whether you agree with it or not, about how here's a guy who gives off the big I am when he hasn't actually done anything yet. And look, I don't mind admitting he winds me up sometimes, yet I also love it. I'm sort of quite conflicted on Alexander Zverev, but I think today we saw another side to him maybe that he won't allow us to see a lot of the time.
Yeah, but when I finally got down from the stairs, I seem to spend more time on the stairs than Sylvester Stallone in Rocky. But when I finally got down, he was still talking. The kind of boos had died down a little bit, and he looked very kind of taken aback and quite humble. I mean, humble isn't the word that we normally associate with Alexander Zverev, but that was how he came across, and that's to his credit, I would say. That was a good way of dealing with the situation. He could have kind of puffed his chest out and gone into that stroppy mode, but he didn't. He kind of went a bit quiet and taken aback, as you say. And I think that was a different side of him, and it felt like the right thing, maybe, in a situation, yes, not to be too bolshy.
Yeah, what I like about him, and I like for the future, is that here we have a player that we've talked about for a long time as a potential world number one and somebody who may well dominate the game. But I like the fact that he is not worried about who he upsets. I mean, I think actually in that instance he showed that he was worried about it. But
well, that's a crowd. I mean, that's a very different thing. But he took on Tsitsipas
early
in the week.
And don't you just... I mean, look, we've stuck up for Tsitsipas in the past and said, oh, and I do believe this, let him be what he is. He's a different kind of guy altogether. It is quite a delicious thought for the future, isn't it?
They really don't like each other. I'm convinced of that. There's no manufacturing going on there,
and they are such sort of alpha males in the type of way they carry themselves, of they want to be the cock of the street, really, both of them, and they firmly believe that that's what they are.
And Kachanov, he's not necessarily a guy who's going to take too many backwards steps.
No, well, and he's quieter about it. And he's the sort of kid that you could imagine gets mildly bullied at school and pushed around and doesn't say anything back. And then one day he just flattens the bully, and then it all changes. Do you not think? Thoughts, Matt?
Yeah.
What do you think of Zverev from what you've seen so far this week?
To be honest, I've always been a bit more glass... I don't know, I guess glass half full than perhaps you have with him. I like him. I think... I did wonder in that moment whether, kind of for Osaka at the US Open, I always think she will always now have the crowd on her side because people are going to know about that moment. I don't think this moment with Zverev will quite have the same impact as that, but it might win over a few people the way he...
I'd say so. A few will warm to him from today.
Yeah, the way he dealt with it, as Simon said, it was... he was quite humble about it and he just dealt with it well. And also, to be honest, the fact that he called it in the first place, I like that. I can imagine some players would have perhaps seen the ball out the corner of their eye. Oh, the umpire's not called it. I'm playing Federer. It's 4-3 in the tie break. I'm just going to let this go, lose the point, move on. But Zverev was straight in there and stepped up, and fair play to him. I like that.
And he was right.
He was right.
That's, the way in which sport does reveal character, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if that had been Kyle Edmund, do you think he would have stopped?
I don't know. That's a very interesting question. Yeah, I still think back to when Kyle Edmund had that row with the umpire in the semi-final, and it was what I described it as a very polite, mild-mannered McEnroe moment. And and he then launched one of the hardest returns I've ever seen in the next point out of just sheer fury. But I know what you mean. There are a lot of people against Federer who would be a little bit too subservient and polite in that situation. Just to finish off, we'll come back for the second semi-final, but Jamie Murray today alongside Bruno Suarez up against Jack Sock and Mike Bryan, one of the matches of the week, probably the best match I've seen all week. We commentated on it together, Simon. Eventually it was won by Sock and Bryan in a match tiebreak. That had everything as a doubles match, didn't it?
Yeah, and I was quite glad that Jamie came into the press room and he wasn't at all down on himself. He said, look, we played a good match. You know, Jack Sock was world class today. He was like a gorilla sometimes, and he was charging the net, and he seemed to be just totally filling the entire court. He's a big lad, and he was using his power. He had finesse when he wanted it. He had reactions. It's funny to, you know, Mike Bryan, half of the best doubles team the world has ever seen, and he's not the strong partner on the team. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, he was the perfect foil.
Yeah, Sock has that amazing ability to just, you know, it's four players on a doubles court, but you're just drawn to Sock because he just takes over, whether it be a forehand or a volley, or he did an amazing little flick pass he did in the match tiebreak.
Yes, that one, when the ball was behind him, and he got it across his body, and at the moment he made contact with the ball, he was suddenly open mouthed with in awe at his own brilliance. And
that was a bit of showboating. But I mean, you know, that's a touch wrist flick on the forehand, where normally he's all kind of, I don't know how you describe those inverted forehands, but they are normally power rather than touch, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're not normally a finesse shot, so to change in that instant to play the finesse shot was impressive. And, you know, for the point of view of your eye being drawn to him, well, everyone else was wearing navy or black and he was wearing luminous orange.
But I must say also on Mike Bryan pulled off an unbelievable sort of 360 volley as well.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the pair of them together in that tiebreak, as you said, Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez didn't do a lot wrong, and they just took the match from them. Really good.
Actually, Jamie said, you know, he said exactly what we were saying, which is quite reassuring. He said, great match, four different styles of player. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, we've enjoyed our afternoon. No doubt we'll enjoy the evening. We'll come back and tell you all about it in a couple of seconds.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Well, some hours later, and I've just walked back into the media restaurant where Grad Matt is sitting here. We've got a beer open, and we need a beer open tonight to try to settle down and understand what we've just witnessed. Because I think the first thing we did when we sat here, Matt, is shake our heads. And in bewilderment at the level. I think at the level of tennis that Novak Djokovic has just produced, he's won through 6-2, 6-2 against Kevin Anderson, who's a mightily good tennis player. He's beaten him 6-2, 6-2 in an hour and 15 minutes, and it was it's a no contest because Djokovic was just too good. I mean, am I over-egging it?
No, I don't think so. It was an absolute clinic tonight from Djokovic. I kept thinking of that quote that he's come up with a few times where he says, if you strive for perfection, you can reach excellence. And that just struck me tonight because the number of times he was almost getting a little bit irritated with himself when he wasn't returning an Anderson serve that was 138 miles an hour. That was the level he was expecting from him tonight. And he just handled Anderson so easily, broke him in the first game, and from there he was away. And if you think the three sort of pillars of a tennis player's game is their serve, their return, and their ground game, Djokovic he's reached the final here averaging less than one point dropped per service game. He's barely losing points on his serve. He won half the points on Kevin Anderson's serve tonight, so he completely negated Anderson's biggest weapon. And his ground game, he was so loose and just ripping winners from the baseline, and it was unbelievable.
That looseness, I think, is notable because he doesn't muscle the ball. He just unscrews this wind up and off it goes. You know, it really. I was there trying to explain to somebody who doesn't know that much about tennis in the commentary box. I was off commentary during the second set of it, and I said the thing is, it's not like he's beating you up with a blunt instrument. He's like watching a samurai just lacerating you. I know that sounds a bit gory, but that's the sort of effect his tennis strokes have. And crikey, I felt for Kevin Anderson because he was made to look cumbersome and ordinary, and he's anything but those things.
No, absolutely. And I did think in the first set he wasn't getting enough first serves, and he was under 50%. So I thought, right, come on, Kevin, let's up it in the second set. He did. He went up to almost 65%, and he still got absolutely hammered. So I did feel for him, and Djokovic, he just was just controlling the middle of the court and spreading the play. It was breathtaking stuff. It really was.
But based on what you've seen today, if Zverev brings his best, will that make a difference? Could that take this match, do you think, from Djokovic? What do you think?
I think if Djokovic brings his best, he's going to win, even if Zverev plays his best. I think Zverev's best will push Djokovic more than we've seen this tournament, but it's very hard to see Djokovic losing tomorrow based on that.
I think Djokovic
tonight
is playing better now than he did 2 years ago. Maybe that's just recency bias.
I mean, I think back to some of those performances, the way he just ripped. I think he laid down 6-1 sets on the start of the 2016 season on Nadal, Federer, Murray. And that was, for me, that was perhaps a slightly higher level.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the calibre of opponent.
And the stage. He was
and
doing
the stage,
that at the Australian
exactly.
Open and things like that, wasn't he?
But for sure, he's getting very close. I think he's certainly playing at a higher level now than he was even when he won Wimbledon and the US Open, I think. He is looking so good.
Yeah. We had the doubles tonight as well. I have to just tell you that right next to our commentary box was a little hospitality box full of Colombian fans cheering on Juan Sebastian Cabal and I can't remember the chap's name, Farah. I can't remember his first name. Robert, I think. And they were making the biggest racket you've ever heard in your life. It was fantastic atmosphere. But in the end, Pierre Hugobert and Nicolas Mahou won through, so they faced Jack Sock and Mike Bryan.
Yeah, and the interesting thing on Mahou and Herbert, I was looking a little bit at their stats, that was the first time they'd won a deciding sort of match tiebreak since February. They'd lost six in a row, I think. So that was big for them to come through
that match tiebreak. Right. So one more day, Matt.
One more day.
One more podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're off to go and cover the Davis Cup final.
Davis Cup final,
that's
yeah.
That's where you'll be going.
Yeah.
So that's all to come. Yes, we will have daily shows from the Davis Cup final. We will also be planning for next year. We're not going anywhere, we hope. We need your help. We're hoping that you can help us to fund the Tennis Podcast in 2019 the way you have the last 2 years. We're going to run a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign from the start of December. We'll be doing that. And, we plan to do as many podcasts as we possibly can. So that has been the Tennis Podcast for today. I have, however, just very quickly, Matt, been appealing for questions for you.
Yes.
Because I thought...
I'm worried about this.
I know. Well, calm down. I thought, you know, people are just sort of getting to know student Matt stroke grad Matt stroke... His real name is Matthew Roberts. So there you are. You've already got some information about Matt here. But I thought, you know, let's see if you can maybe ask one or two questions and find out what you want to know about Matt. So I'm just going to bring up my tweet here that I put out yesterday and see what you've got in store for grad Matt. Right, Dan Connolly wants to know, what is your favourite Grand Slam to watch and why?
Oh, blimey. My favourite would probably be the Australian Open. I wrote a blog about this, which is available on the Tennis Podcast website.
Good plug.
Yeah. I just think start of the season, the players are fresh. I think hard court, for me, is probably the most interesting surface to watch because it's the best leveller. And in recent years, it's been quite reasonably fast. I quite like a fast hard court. And also, it's the only one I've not been to, so I don't have any sort of... preconceptions, or I haven't been able to judge it in any way. It is just what I think it is, and in my mind, it's probably the best.
You have a mystical view,
exactly.
So you're dissing Wimbledon.
I'm not dissing Wimbledon.
I am a troublemaker. You do understand this.
You are.
You've been
David.
Listening long enough. Right. Okay. That's your question for today. One a day is all I'm saying to you. Get your questions in for Grad Matt at Tennis Podcast. We're going to go and have a beer.
That was a really boring answer, wasn't it?
No, I quite liked it. I'm with you. I know where we are now. All right. Okay. Australian Open. Don't talk about the US Open. It'll bring you out in anger. We're going to be back tomorrow. We are being executive produced by Melanie Bowes, SSS, tennisballs.com, sponsored by the Manga Club, and mascot is Charlie the Ferret. We're produced in association with The Telegraph, and we'll be back tomorrow for the final. We'll see you then.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.